I'm a PhD student at Sapienza University, and I've been working on themes at the intersection of quantum information, foundations, and quantum gravity. And today I will present to you a recent work that I've completed with Carlo Rovelli and Pietro Donà, as well as ongoing work on the relation between causality and time, and time direction. And as some of you might know, this interest of mine started at a recent conference in quantum information and quantum gravity, where there was on display a tension between the quantum foundation communities and the quantum gravity community about the time orientation of the notion of causality. So as many of you probably know, a probabilistic theory is deemed causal if the probabilities of a given operation do not depend on the choice of a later operation. And this is often represented by this diagram. For example, in the operational formulation of quantum mechanics, the phi would be a completely positive trip-preserving map. And this is obviously a time-oriented notion of causality. So there's a directionality to it. And even in the diagram, we have this flow of time from the bottom to the top. And this is a symmetric property of the maps that we consider. Whereas in relativity, the notion of causality is explicitly time symmetric, and maybe it's represented by this diagram. And if we imagine solving the evolution of a system given the condition of some sort of a spatial hypersurface, causality means that if we change the initial conditions inside the region of the hypersurface, then this implies a change only in a certain domain of space-time. But this change happens both in the past and in the future of that region. And because causality plays a fundamental role in gravity, and the development of quantum information and quantum foundations will bring us closer to quantum gravity, I think this tension about time needs to be analyzed and addressed. In particular, one of the most exciting developments in quantum information are the reconstructions of the Hilbert space formalism of quantum mechanics from informational and physical principles. And here I just have a selection of, the reconstructions I know of. And these are fantastic works because they bring us closer to understanding, you know, what is strange about the quantum and like maybe the motivations of it. But every single one of these reconstructions is time-oriented. So it's either time-oriented from the get-go, so it's formulated in terms of prepare and measure scenarios where you're trying to guess things about the future. Or it doesn't start time-oriented, but then some time-oriented axiom gets put in at one point, so that makes it explicitly time-oriented. There is, maybe there is an exception with this one by Ding Jia, where actually it starts even without assuming a definite causal structure and recovers even the process, the W matrix formalism of quantum mechanics. But I think even there is a basis of prediction, so some time orientation. And I think like the question we need to ask is really, does the uncertainty about quantum mechanics imply time orientation? So when we learn it in school, we know that the quantum state is correlated with something that happens in the past. And so this is kind of the way we learn about it. But I think this fundamental time orientation is even a bigger break from classical theory than just indeterminism, because the classical theories of physics we had were all time symmetric in detail. And we explain the time asymmetry of the world in terms of a peculiarity of the specific state, but not about the laws themselves. So I think this is an important question to ask. And I'd argue that the answer is no. So in the first part of the talk, which will be also the longest part, I will summarize the argument that we put forward in this recent work with Carlo Rovelli and Pietro Donà, which goes towards saying that quantum mechanics does not imply a fundamental time orientation. And then in the second part of the talk, which will be considerably shorter, I just sketch the kind of work I'm doing right now based on recent work by Schmidt, Selby, and Spackens, who are all here, I think. So it's a pleasure to talk about this. And before I get into it, I just invite you, I don't know if the rules allow it, but I invite you to ask me, interrupt me if I say something muddled or if you want a clarification. I'd be more than happy to stop for a second and re-explain, or even ask me a short, like a smaller question.
I have a question. Can you go back?
Yeah. Here? How far?
Yeah, this one, yeah. A very simple one. So in the second box, relative risk and causality, why did you say I guess I'm not quite sure what you mean by the influence on the past in the second figure.
So if you think about classical mechanics and dynamical systems, you specify the initial conditions of a system, and then you use the equations of motion to evolve the conditions in time, right? But you can evolve the conditions towards the future and towards the past, right? And so if you choose a different initial condition, both the future and the past will change. Does that answer your question?
Why is this related to relativity?
Because this is the relativity, the notion of causality is that when you change, when the equation of the motions are causal, when you change the initial conditions, only things outside the light cone of the region in which you change, sorry, the things outside the region of, things outside the light cone of the region you change don't change.
Yeah, but I mean, the same thing can be also said in the non-relativistic setting without a well-defined light cone there.
Well, in a relativistic setting, for example, if you consider the Newtonian interaction, and then the change propagates at infinite speed. So I don't think that's true.
No, I think what the question is that there is the same time reversal invariance forgetting relativity.
Ah, yes,
just
yes.
In Newtonian.
Yeah, maybe classical.
The question. So,
yeah, maybe I could say classical.
So that's right. You could have argued, you could have done the same argument in this slide by just referring only to classical mechanics and not specifically to the causal structure.
Yeah, fair enough. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Quick question.
Can I ask a question? Okay. Sorry.
Okay, so Lee was first, and then, we're back. Yeah?
This is just a question about your logic. You're going to show that you can reformulate those different approaches to quantum mechanics in a way that's time symmetric. But that doesn't mean that the correct answer, that is nature, isn't time asymmetric. You're just saying it's consistent with what we know, that nature could fundamentally be time symmetric. But you don't show any inconsistency with the formulation as time asymmetric.
Right, and quantum mechanics does not provide evidence for a fundamental time asymmetry. Exactly because, as you say, it can be reformulated in a time symmetric way.
Right.
There was another question.
Sorry, just a quick question. Forgive me if it's a silly question. Regarding the solutions to Schrodinger equations,
yes.
Are they, I think those are also invariant under inversion of time.
Yeah, I think there's some complications with taking complex conjugates or something like this, but essentially, yes.
Okay.
All right, so if there's no more questions, I'll start going. So the main argument works around a setup and two possible games. And these are time symmetric games in the sense that one is about predicting the future and one is about post-dicting the past. And the basic setup of these games is that you can imagine you have a friend who is a skilled quantum experimentalist, and your friend is doing a series of prepare and measure experiments. And you're only given knowledge about the set of possible initial states of the system and the set of possible final states of the system and the transformation that your friend is doing before measuring. And for the whole presentation, these possible sets will be a selection from it will be an orthonormal basis of the quantum system. And in the prediction game, your friend tells you the initial state, right? It tells you the transformation, and it tells you the possible final states on which the quantum, in which the measurement would be the outcomes of the measurement. And she asks you to calculate the probability that a certain final state was achieved. And this is the general application of quantum mechanics. As you know, we can only calculate probabilities, and we will call these prediction probabilities, like down here. But we can also ask the time reverse game just as easily. So we can imagine our friend telling us the final state, and given only knowledge about the transformation that happened and the set of possible initial state, ask us to calculate the probabilities for a specific initial state. And these will be called the postdiction probabilities. And so these games are they're related to each other in the sense that in this postdiction game, you only know about the past, you only know the set of possible final states, the initial states, sorry. Whereas where normally we do prediction, we only know the set of possible final states. And so we have this mirror situation here. And we can solve this. Yes.
But to evaluate the probabilities, don't we have to be to the future of the whole experiment to be able to find those p's, whether they're postdicted or predicted? We need to complete the experiment, and then we're in the future of the whole thing.
Well, in practice, yes. But in principle, we can think about all of this from the past, right? We can say, if my friend will tell me in the future that she started with A, then I will tell her X. Or I can be completely in the future and do all of this postdoc.
I could define the future as being the direction that was incomplete in however you formulate. Anyway, I think there's a hole here that I'm concerned with.
Yes, this is an important part of the argument. We will have chances to come back to it as well, I'm sure. But basically, analyzing the relation between these two games, we can start learning something about what quantum mechanics knows about the direction of time. And the simplest case, obviously, to solve is the case in which we have a closed system. So the evolution is a unitary evolution. And the prediction probabilities are given by the Born rule, as we are totally used to doing all the time. And the postdiction probabilities can be obtained by a Bayes theorem. And since, as I said, we only know the set of possible initial states, the prior that we assign to those is the uniform distribution. And then we can use the solution to the prediction game, as we normally do, to calculate the probability of the observed final state. And by a property of the unitary evolutions, we get that also the probability of the final state is uniformly distributed. And this is a property of unitary evolution that somehow preserves your ignorance from past to future. But what this means in terms of the solution and in Bayes' theorem, it means that the postdiction probability is equal to the prediction probability. And they're both given by the Born rule. So without modifying the Born rule, we can just use it to predict the past, postdict the past. And we call this property inference symmetry. So given the initial basis and the final basis and the transformation, the prediction and postdiction probability are the same. And closed quantum systems, as we've shown, are inference symmetric. And this is an easy result to calculate, but I think it's an important result in terms of telling us something else about time. Because if we think about a time reversal, we have two kinds of time reversal, passive time reversal and active time reversal. And in the passive case, what we normally do in classical mechanics, what we do is just we relabel everything. We send t to minus t. And so we describe things from the future to the past instead of from the past to the future. And if you think for a moment, this is exactly like going from the prediction game to the postdiction game. So if we imagine rolling the set of events, we learn about the final state first, and then we learn about the transformation. And then at that moment, we can ask about the initial state using quantum mechanics. And so we get the postdiction. It's a postdiction task. Whereas normally we know about the initial state first, and then we know about the transformation, and then we guess about the future. The active time transformation is instead of, we don't consider the same system just describing it in a different way, we actually consider a different system. And so actually this relates us to a different setup where the transformation is the adjoint. And then we just inverted the basis. and this diagram closes like this. And all of these four probabilities, they're all given by the Bohn rule. And so this is easy to derive, but I think it's a underrated time symmetric property of unitary quantum evolution. That really the Bohn rule is just telling us the probability of something given something else. And it does not really care in which direction of time the events happened or we are like thinking about them. Obviously, if we want to start talking about the operational formalism, we have to go a bit beyond closed quantum systems. We have to think about open quantum system. But you can feed these. Yep.
Right, sure. On your last slide.
Yeah. I
wanted to make sure I understood. Are you thinking of the active transformation as imagine a new experiment where the preparations are labeled by this X basis and the measurement is outcomes are labeled by the A basis? Is that the idea?
Yes, precisely. So we're mapping to a new system. And so we call it a time reversed game, but it's a different game. Thanks for the question. So to simulate the open quantum systems, what we do is that we assume a tensor decomposition for both the input and output spaces.
Excuse me. Also want to make sure you apply, so you don't assume any time reversal in the Hamiltonian, do you?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I'm asking if time evolution is generated by some Hamiltonian, do you assume any time reversal symmetry in the Hamiltonian?
Do we assume any, what kind of symmetry in the Hamiltonian?
Time reversal symmetry.
Time reversal symmetry in the Hamiltonian. I guess the Hamiltonian will be time independent, but I'm just thinking about, if you want, about it kinematically at the moment. Not thinking about the specific Hamiltonian here.
So you don't assume.
You assume it's Hermitian because it's unitary evolution. So the Hamiltonian is Hermitian. It's time independent in Hermitian, right?
And both symmetry and Hermitianity, they are two different things. But my understanding is so far, you don't need to assume any time reversal symmetry. And I just want to confirm it.
Yeah, I'm not assuming it. I'm showing it. I'm assuming only the Bohn rule.
The thing you have been showing is independent of the time reversal symmetry of the Hamiltonian. That's my understanding.
Oh yeah, maybe.
Okay. Maybe let's put some concrete examples. For example, if we have a constant magnetic field and we have a charged particle, then the Hamiltonian describing this motion is not time reversal symmetric. But it seems like your argument still applies.
Well, yeah, I guess you wouldn't just send t to minus t, but you'd have to like do some reflections and stuff like this. This is what you're talking about.
I mean, you are just taking u to u dagger. This may not be the time reversal operation of quantum mechanics. In the case where,
yeah, I guess so.
Where the Hamiltonian is time reversal symmetric, then it is the time reversal operation.
Yeah, I guess we're mapping to a different system with a different, like slightly different Hamiltonian, but the result is that the U goes to U dagger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're assuming the final, I'm assuming this transformation.
Yeah, thanks. Okay.
So to simulate open quantum systems, for example, we can simulate leakage of information to the environment by our friend only asking us to predict X on the basis of the initial state without disregarding y. And this, just using probability theory, we just marginalize the prediction probability of the full system. And this is represented at the level of the formalism by having the partial trace on the subspace of y. Similarly, if we are doing prediction, but we're only given part of the input state, we conditionalize the prediction probabilities with the flat prior, and this is equivalent to having the totally mixed state as part of the input. Then we can ask about doing postdiction on open systems. So to simulate the situation in which we're postdicting on only partial information about the future, we conditionalize the postdiction probabilities. And this is like having the totally mixed state in the future. And similarly, if we are doing postdiction but only on part of the system, we are having here the identity but is not normalized. And so somehow we are discarding in the past. And as you can see, are you raising your hand, Lee? You're muted.
There's a problem of definition here. In the case of the active reversal, you take a situation where we have definite knowledge in one direction, quote, to the past, and indefinite knowledge to the future. Right. And then we resolve it in a certain way. What you call the active transformation reverses that, and you have definite knowledge to, quote, the future and indefinite knowledge to the past. But you haven't said what happens to the rest of the universe when you do that active time reversal. What if I just define the past to be the definite direction in which you have definite knowledge, and the future, the direction in which you have indefinite knowledge? Then that would be invariant under your transformation. And you would always, by convention, talk about the past and the future asymmetrically.
Right, this is true. And this is how we generally decide what the past is. The past is what I remember and the future is what I don't remember. So I agree with you, but here we're not considering the dynamics of the whole universe. We are imagining like a smaller part of the universe, and we're like this kind of situation idealized with a friend in a lab, and the lab is time oriented by itself. And we're just considering the evolution of one quantum, if you want, like a small quantum system. So I'm really looking in the detail of the evolution of a single quantum system under different setups, and looking how what quantum mechanics tells us about this elementary transition, if you want. So when I do the active transformation, I'm not reversing the whole universe. I'm just switching, I'm just changing either what my friend is telling me, or I'm changing what system my friend is working with.
Yes, well, let's go back to it when you're done, because I still think that that you're assuming something which basically assumes your result.
Yes, I guess if I may guess what you're trying to say is the Udagger.
Yes.
Yes, in a way, yes. I know that if I apply U and then Udagger, I go back to the initial state. So I define that as the active time reversal of my initial process.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Go on.
But this is also how we normally think about time reversal, isn't it? Like applying the dagger. So anyway, we have these four probabilities, and if you look at the diagrams, it's interesting. Like it's quite suggestive. You see that the identity, which is represented by this Earth symbol, is normalized or unnormalized, depending on which direction, which role it's playing. Is it playing the role of prior? Then it's normalized. And if it's playing the role of just the part that we discard, then we non-normalize. And so we have this breaking of time of the inference symmetry of the process. But it's broken in a very simple way by this normalization factor. And the way that the normalization is chosen is not dependent on time. It's just dependent in which direction we are guessing. So the relation of our guessing with the data. We can now move to quantum channels. So we can do the same game as we did for unitary channels. So this is a general CPTP map. And the prediction probabilities are given by the Born rule. The post-prediction probabilities are obtained by Bayes' theorem again. But this time, while the prior is still the uniform prior, the probability of the data is not necessarily the flat distribution. And so what we get is that the post-prediction and prediction probabilities are different. And in general, the quantum channels are not inference symmetric. And this was actually where I started thinking about it. So like the main operations that we think about in the operational formulations don't have these time symmetric properties that the unitaries have. Now, just by looking at this formula, we can tell which class of quantum channels are post-prediction symmetric, namely the ones that are unit preserving, on top of being completely trace preserving. And these are the bistochastic maps, they're called. And they are used as the free operations of the resource theory of purity, and sometimes in quantum thermodynamics. And unit preservation is represented by the flip side of the condition of trace preservation. This is simply because the unit is the unit matrix is the adjoint of the trace. But the thing is, if you impose this both conditions, we have this interesting time symmetry. If you impose only one, then you don't have it. And the question is, is the fact that this is true, something deeply fundamental about quantum mechanics. And I think if we think about, we can argue that this is not the case. In particular, as you know, that every quantum channel can be represented by the Stein-Spring dilation as an interaction with an ancilla, a unitary interaction with an ancilla prepared in a certain state. And this is a mathematical statement, which is true, but it's, I would argue, also is a physical statement, because in practice, these quantum operations are performed by some sort of apparatus, and the apparatus itself, we assume that this is also a quantum system. And so I think the purification is essentially moving the Heisenberg cut to include part of the degrees of freedom of the quantum system, of the apparatus into the quantum system that we model explicitly. And in fact, this idea allows us to understand the inference asymmetry of quantum channels. In particular, if we look at the post-Dixon probability for a certain quantum channel, we can it's actually equal to the post-Dixon probability of a different game in which we are using this unitary evolution, but where we assume not only knowledge about the future, but also some knowledge about the past, specifically the initial state of the ancilla. And the proof is almost elementary. Like we just use conditional probabilities applied to the open quantum systems. And I'll just go quickly through this, but it's essentially you express the post-Dixon probabilities in terms of the prediction probabilities using these normalizations when we're doing the couple of slides ago I showed you, then relate those to the prediction probabilities for the quantum channel, and we get this formula. So really, we using the purification, we can understand the inference asymmetry in terms of an asymmetry in the data we assume. Essentially, when a friend is telling us that she's applying the transformation phi, she's implicitly giving us some knowledge about the input of the unitary interaction that's happening. And so when we do post-Dixon, we're not assuming only knowledge about the past, but we're also assuming partial knowledge about the future. And this creates an asymmetry, because normally when we do prediction, we assume no knowledge about the future. So this is kind of the meat of the argument. And we can take these insights to look at two maxims that come up frequently in the quantum foundations and quantum information literature. Namely, there exists a unique deterministic effect, and the choice of an operation does not affect the probabilities of the outcome of an earlier operation. And I'll go through this one by one. So the first one is obviously mathematically correct from the definitions. So an effect is a completely positive trace non-decreasing map to the trivial system. And the only trace preserving such map is the trace itself. So there's only one deterministic effect, like trace preserving effect. It's also physically true, because as we all know, there's a fundamental unpredictability in quantum mechanics. So we have also done it physically. So the only way to guess is actually not guessing at all. But this is not about a difference between past and future, because there's also a fundamental unpostdictability in quantum mechanics, as we've seen, both for the unitary quantum channels and the quantum channels in general. So actually, that maxim actually could be understood as when predicting, there is a unique deterministic effect. And then when postdicting, there exists a unique deterministic state. This is kind of hand-wavy, but the idea is that really what's going on is that there's a fundamental uncertainty, and this goes both ways in time. Whereas for the second maxim, this is also mathematically correct, and it's a direct consequence of the conservation of probabilities. It's also physically correct, because when we do experiments, when we do a spin measurement now, we know that the effect of future things that happen to the system don't really matter to predicting the probabilities of the result. But again, it's not a difference between past and future specifically, but it's more a difference about it's more like an asymmetry about the process of actually inferring something about the system, about guessing. And I'll make the argument a bit more in detail in a couple of slides. So for who needs a refresher, an operation, also known as an instrument, is a P of M, namely, is a set of completely positive trace non-decreasing maps, such that the sum of these maps is a completely positive trace preserving map. And every element of the operation represents a possible outcome of the operation. And the probability of the outcome is given by this. Graphically, we have these two equations. And another thing we need to know is that when two operations are composed in sequence, we get a new operation. And the probability of the outcomes of the new operation is given by this formula here. We're just sequentially composing them. So that statement about the choice of a later operation does not affect the probabilities of an earlier operation is very easy to derive mathematically. So here, we don't care about the outcome of the second operation. We sum over all the possible outcomes. Then this is trace preserving. So this drops out. And so the probability of obtaining result X for the first operation is the same regardless of if F was applied or which F was applied. And this is true, mathematically true, obviously true. The other statement we wanted, maybe what naively would look like the time reverse statement, is also obviously false. So when we sum over all possible values for X, E does not drop out of the equation, so E stays there. But this is not actually a fair comparison because these probabilities are prediction probabilities. So we have a directionality in the phenomenon of guessing itself. So we can look at this a bit more closely. So we can purify operations like we can purify quantum channels. So for example, the operation E, X, is again a unitary with a certain Ancilla state. And then the outcome is the outcome of a measurement on an orthonormal basis. And same for similarly for F. And here I'm omitting some, normally you also discard part of some system, but this is irrelevant for the talk. We'll just mess with the equations. So when we're summing over all possible outcomes of F, what we're doing really is that we are disregarding, if we imagine this is our prediction game now, we are disregarding part of the output, specifically the output that is relevant to F. And because unitaries are trace preserving, F drops out, and so does C, which specified, in a way, this cannot allow to select different operations as well. But both U and C disappear from the formula, and it's as if F doesn't happen. And so this is this choice of a later operation does not affect. But the time symmetric version of this is actually looking at a postdiction setup where we assume knowledge about the past. And we are trying to guess, sorry, we assume knowledge about the future. And we are trying to guess only something about the past, specifically the initial states that go into this operation. We're not guessing the initial states here. And for the same reason, unitaries are also unit preserving. So F and C drop out from the calculation, and we have this. So really, we can compare like a prediction game and a similar postdiction game. And what we see really is that what happened, so we are trying to guess, in both cases, we're only trying to guess something that relates to the first operation, but not the first one in time, but the first one from the assumed data. And so in a way, it's when we're doing this sort of things with the unitary operations, what drops out is not what happens later in time, but it's what happens further away from the initial assumed data. So to summarize, there are two aspects that come up regularly in this discussion that are time asymmetric. One is that we are constantly interested in prediction. So we formulate quantum mechanics in terms of predicting the future. And then we also consider some time asymmetry in the boundary conditions. And this is the definition of alternatively on the definition of what operations we can do. And I think what the discussion I just went through shows is that these things are not fundamental to what we think of unitary quantum mechanics, but they're actually something that is surrounds the system. In a way, they can be understood in terms of thermodynamics. Specifically, as humans, we remember the past, but not the future. And we also make choices that affect the future and not the past. Like we set up the initial conditions for a system and we see what happens. And I would argue this is not obvious that this is a consequence of quantum mechanics. Actually, I think there's no way to argue that it's a consequence of quantum mechanics, that this is the case. And there's, in principle, there are arguments that can be done already at the level of classical mechanics to explain this asymmetry. and maybe these vary in the detail, like quantitative detail, but I think at least qualitatively they're quite convincing, and maybe more work can be done to make it quantitative, but I think it's a pretty solid idea. It's a collective, it's a thing about the collective, just like in classical mechanics. So maybe another way to think about it is that the time asymmetry in quantum mechanics comes from, like, the user of quantum mechanics comes from us, so like the way we use it. And this makes total sense, especially in quantum information, where we are thinking about what agents that are working, exchanging quantum systems, what they can do. And agents are time-oriented, and so if we want to reason about what they can do, it's fine that our formalism is time-oriented. But it does not necessarily imply that the detailed physics itself is time-oriented. And again, the agent is not modeled by the theory, but it's kind of the input to the theory, or if you wanted, the boundary conditions. And you can find all of this argument in more detail on the archive. This is the work I've done with Pietro and Carlo. And then, I don't know, how much time do I have?
So like 8 minutes.
Okay, that should actually could work. So given all this, I want to talk to you quickly about what I'm doing right now. And this involves also work of people that are present here. So at the end, like while we were finishing this work, it was becoming very clear to me that there are two themes that are kind of jiving. One is that the transition probabilities don't care about the direction of time. This goes back to the unitary stuff at the beginning of the presentation. But that there is a real difference between known and unknown. So that if you want, there is an arrow of inference, but there doesn't seem to be necessarily an arrow of time. And I wanted to kind of tear these things apart, because the diagrammatic calculus is very beautiful for thinking about distributed processes and how things connect to each other. But they're kind of hopelessly mixing these two aspects, like the inferential and the physical part. So when we draw a diagram like this, this is a number. It's kind of a schematic representation of what's going on, like a prepare and measure scenario. And it's a probability about guessing the future. And it's also probability about guessing the past. And this is kind of all mixed in together. And implicitly, when we draw this diagram, we're always thinking about predicting the future, but it's not obvious from the diagram itself. So like in the final stages of preparing this, our preprint, this work appeared by Schmidt, Selby, and Spackens, where they design a mathematical framework that is specifically intended to separate, tease apart the physical aspects and the inferential aspects. So, and basically you have these two process theories, the causal theory that represents the physical process that's going on, and an inferential theory that represents our way of guessing the stuff. And they can talk to each other in a certain way. And I won't present it in detail because I don't have time. Also, I wouldn't do it justice. And but essentially, you have this process theory that you have time flowing from top to the bottom of the page. And then you have this inferential process that goes from left to right. And a diagram like this is the probability of a certain proposition P about a system X being true given a state of belief sigma. And you can have you can do Bayesian updating here, where you have like a belief on X is transformed into a belief on Y, for example. And these two things can talk to each other by a certain number of generators. And so, for example, here you can state like a belief about a system, about a transformation of a system. Here you can have a proposition about a state of a system, for example. And here you have this generator that means ignoring the future of a system. And so while this is fantastic, and it's designed also to think about the Bell inequalities and interpretations of quantum mechanics, there was something that I think can be, from the purposes of what I'm interested in, can be improved, which is here we have an arrow of inference, which is deciding not to regard something, but we also have an arrow of time in a way, or at least an arrow of causation. And I think basically what I'm working on right now is to kind of remove the asymmetry in the causal theory. And so assuming the time reversal of this, or maybe assuming none of these, not neither this nor the time reversal. So I'm still kind of figuring it out. But this is quite, I'll just show you why this is, I think this is how this kind of works quickly. So from the prepare and measure scenario here, you can put it like this, and you're just saying here that you believe that U is happening in this box. Then you can say, I believe that A started in this box. And then I'm asking, what's the probability of X having happened here? And you have the prediction probability. And similarly, you can do the post-prediction probability explicitly like this. And so you can have the same physical process, this prepare and measure, but two different inferential processes, and you can show the difference between the two. Similarly, for the quantum channel, you have this belief on the unitary and the ancilla, and actually you can be more sophisticated. You can say you have a joint belief on the transformation and the ancilla, because to any quantum channel, there are many, many purifications, infinity. So you can just say, well, this is you have a joint belief in the result of this purification. Similarly, for the operations here, you purify the two things here, and you have the probability on the outcome. So you're asking, what's the probability of having the outcome X? And so if I want to make this time symmetric, I need to figure out choose a correct time symmetric process theory for the physical stuff. And here, for all the things that we looked at, which are very simple scenarios, all you need is pure state preparations, pure state measurements, and unitary transformations. But maybe something more like elaborate is needed. And in terms of the time symmetry, you can imagine here, deciding not to guess about something that happens in the future means that it doesn't matter what your knowledge is about the transformation. Similarly, if you're doing post-diction, you don't assume anything about, you assume no knowledge about the future. And again, the transformation does not matter. And these are true for both quantum channels and, for unitary operators. And you can assume also the time reversed versions of these. And I think this is like a stepping stone to think about causality in a timeless way, where we take seriously that the way the diagram is wired together represents the way your belief can be propagated to the system. So like a belief about what's going on here has repercussions for things that are in the future that are causally connected in one direction, but has no repercussions for what happens here. And for example, in the signaling setup where you have two agents, Alice and Bob, for example, that Alice knows the shared state with Bob, and she knows her input state, and she also knows her output state, but she doesn't know anything that happens to the future of Bob. And she tries to guess Bob's input, and as you know, quantum mechanics does not allow it, and you get that Alice does not have anything to know about Bob's input. But you can also have the time reverse setup, where Alice knows about her common, instead of knowing about the common past of her and Bob, she knows the common future of her and Bob. She knows her future, but she doesn't know anything about Bob's past. And given this data, she cannot learn anything about Bob's future in this case, so the outcome of the operation. So I think long-term, this idea is to separate causation from inference, and this is obviously done in great part in Schmidt, Selby, and Spackens, but then to make it so that it looks more time symmetric, and so that causation is not like a directed idea, but it's more something about necessary correlations between two events. And longer term, also maybe shorter term, instead of thinking about unitaries only, about thinking about the Gibbs preserving maps, so we can do quantum thermodynamics, and maybe here we can model explicitly a time orientation in this setup. And then something that has been totally swept under the rug in this whole conversation is the quantum classical interface, or the Heisenberg cut, or the measurement problem, and think about this more elaborately. And then this will pave the way to a time symmetric reconstruction. I think the most likely one is the one by Hahn, that is about questions and answers. So you have a sequence of questions and answers, and you reflect about, you're trying to guess, like you think about what your information about the past will tell you about the likely answer about the future. This is obviously like very time-oriented already as a language, but maybe you can just replace questions and answers with interactions and values of observables. and just think that quantum mechanics allows you to calculate the probability of a certain event given other events, and maybe you can just flip this upside down. I mean, this is, I have not even started doing it. It's just kind of an idea. So I will leave you with a quote by Wheeler, that probability, like time, is a concept invented by humans, and you humans have to bear the responsibility for the obscurities that attend it. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, our speaker. So
yeah, if we have time, I'll take any questions.
Lee?
So let me just finalize the argument that I was making. It was a beautiful talk. It's convincing that you can do your program and carry it out, but I don't see why the outcome is important or why the outcome should change my mind. So supposing I come in with the view that there are indefinite states of the world and there are definite states of the world, and indefinite states can turn into definite states. And simply we call the future the realm of the indefinite states, and the past the realm of the definite states, and the present the realm of the transformations from indefinite to definite states. So obviously I would do that in a much more sophisticated language with some mathematics and so forth, but that's the conceptual framework. So then I've built in the meaning of the future and the meaning of the past to represent the asymmetry that we see in nature as fundamental to the quantum description. Do you have any argument that I would be wrong to formulate quantum mechanics in a deliberately asymmetric way, that way?
Well, I would, without knowing the details of the proposal, obviously, a priori, there is no reason for why the argument would go wrong. I mean, it's the word is, in fact, time-oriented. It's obviously one of the most obvious things we observe. And it's, I guess it's entirely possible to describe, to start with the time asymmetric theory to describe everything. I guess since the jury is still out about whether the time evolution is fundamentally asymmetric or fundamentally symmetric, it's good to explore all avenues. This is not an argument. Work is not an argument against thinking about the world in a time-oriented way, but it's more like a cautionary tale about thinking that quantum mechanics implies time orientation by itself. Then if one has stronger reasons to believe in time orientation, then it's a different argument, but I guess this does not cover it.
Great, well, thank you.
Do you have other questions?
If I can ask mine. Thanks for that talk, Andrea. It was really nice. first, let me say I agree with you that there's definitely more to be done on the causal inferential framework, and in particular, you know. So we've also been thinking about the kind of issue wherein you like in the approach. There's currently this asymmetry between your givens and, you know, what you're making inferences about. So you make inferences about the truth of propositions, you know, and your givens can come in the form of probability distributions over some variable. But typically in an inferential theory, you can also do post-selection. So you can take something that you might have previously thought of as, you know, assigning probabilities to, like the truth of some proposition, and now condition on it and say, I'm going to take that as part of my given now. Mm-hmm. And so that's not incorporated into the framework, how to do essentially Bayesian inversion and post-selection. And so we've been thinking a fair bit about it, how to try to incorporate that, which to some extent means that there's sort of more flexibility between moving between, you know, givens and what you're making inferences about. So the distinction between the left and the right wires in this framework is going to, there's probably going to be some sort of compact structure that allows you to move between those. So I agree that we agree that there's more work to be done there. But even though that's sort of not clear, I'm just wondering, in the earlier part of your talk, you mentioned that the time asymmetry of non-unital quantum channels came from an asymmetry in the boundary conditions. Maybe I missed it, but I imagine, so, you know, like if we talk about the ancilla, there's this asymmetry that in a dilation, typically the ancilla starts out in some non-completely mixed state and then gets traced over. But of course, you could imagine a different scenario where you have some post-selection of the ancilla and you know nothing about its preparation. And so if you did post-diction in that scenario, you would see that you would have that same kind of non like a failure of the complete the trace operation to move through the process, right? You would have also a violation of kind of this backward in time unital condition. So maybe you said that explicitly, but it seemed to me that you could also say that, you know, this time asymmetry can also be sort of eliminated and made time symmetric, just expanding the scope of processes you're willing to consider to ones where your boundary conditions have precisely the opposite, you have the opposite kind of knowledge about the boundary conditions. You have some information about the future of the ancilla and no information about its past. So I take it you agree with all that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I did not mention this. I was just considering the trace preserving maps. I think maybe if one goes further and develops this time, like B causal inferential theory, maybe the two things will become very similar. It won't really matter which one is the future and which one is the past. Like the post-selection and pre-selection somehow become like just conditioning on something that has happened either way. And actually, I have a kind of an ambition because maybe you know this work by Serf and Oreshkov, where they actually lift the time asymmetry of operational quantum theory exactly by doing what you say, by admitting both pre-selection and post-selection. And they develop like this kind of enlarged quantum theory, like on paper enlarged, like you have more operations allowed. And my ambition is kind of to see if that fits inside the B-causal inferential theory in this sense.
Great, thanks.
Okay.
Any more questions?
Go ahead, Dean.
Thank you, David. So my question is, it's more of a comment, like a discussion. I'd like to maybe try to defend the position that it's not wrong to talk about time asymmetric quantum theories. And it's also not wrong to talk about time symmetric quantum theories. Neither is it wrong to talk about quantum theories without a time. It seems to me that these confusions about these debates originate from a way of understanding quantum theory as if it isn't any particular theory. To me, it's more like a framework. I would call it quantum formalism. It's more like the field theory formalism. It's like if you think about field theories, there are different kinds of field theories. There are, you know, field theories for gravity. There's field theory for electromagnetism. These are relativistic, and there are field theories for non-relativistic systems as well. And then to me, it would be really confusing to say a field theory has to be relativistic, or to say a field theory has to be non-relativistic. A field theory allows all these possibilities. I'd like to draw the analogy that quantum formalism is like field theory formalism. We can have time-symmetric quantum theories, time-asymmetric quantum theories, and quantum theories without a time. And they're all useful. Would you agree?
Yes, I think I would agree wholeheartedly, and maybe I should have spent a bit more time on it. Like, obviously, you adapt the formalism to the kind of questions you want to ask, right? And if, for example, going back to the quantum field, to the field theory example, you don't need the relativistic field theory if everything is moving slowly, for example. So it's okay to work in that setup. What I was taking issue at is saying because one specific formalism is missing some aspect, then this is actually true in general, right? And specifically in the context of reconstructions of quantum theory, if we want to apply them to quantum gravity, then we need to reason about time, because in relativity, there is no such time asymmetry. So it would be a non-trivial assumption about quantum gravity to start with the assumption that physics is time-oriented. But otherwise, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Maybe just a follow-up comment, because you mentioned reconstructions of quantum theory.
Yep.
In other words, it's an axiomatization of quantum theory. To me, the spirit should be, when we axiomatize a system, we should have a layer of axioms. We add in one axiom and see what we get. Maybe we get something useful, and then we add more axioms to restrict the theory. It seems to me in this hierarchy, the ideal is that we can have an axiom to single out quantum theory without time, that very high on the hierarchy. And then we can bring in time to say there's a time symmetry. And then another layer, we can bring in some time asymmetry. So it seems to me that one should start with deriving a quantum formalism without a time, instead of directly go to the level that there's time symmetric quantum theories. And it seems to me, is on the slide, you thank you for referring to my work and Robert's work, Robert Eco's work. It seems the goal of us is to have quantum theories without a time to begin with, without referring to time at all. That's in my understanding, our goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that too. And I guess also the explicit aim of the reconstructions was to reconstruct like the textbook or like operational version of quantum mechanics. And so it's good to start with a theory space that is not necessarily time oriented to start with, and then do that. But also, I mean, we had this discussion already with you and also with Urkel, with Robert Urkel privately about this. I'm uncertain about this idea between the choice of the operation and the outcome of the operation, and like how that can actually be time non-oriented if we have this kind of input output set up.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to follow up. I think there's something to be discussed offline.
Yeah.
Thanks for the replies.
Yeah. Maybe I should also mention that I'm aware of Lucien's work as well. This bit, probably like a bit older, maybe like 5 years ago. That also, I think Lucien also has this formalism where you can assume any kind of data and try to guess in any direction of time. But I'm not familiar with it, unfortunately. But I'm aware of his existence. So maybe I should have mentioned this in the work.
That's the causalate framework from
the causalate framework
in 2005. Yeah, yeah. In some ways, it's a very general, almost too general framework. That's kind of its problem. But
I guess the whole point is to start with something general and then and then hone in.
Yeah. But anyway, I think didn't David have a question? I'm gonna...
Yeah, Andrea, thanks for the talk. I enjoyed it. If you can go back 8 or 10 slides, there was a slide with some, it was using some kind of causal inferential like diagrams. Yeah, maybe a bit further. Yes, here.
Sorry, here, yeah.
So I'm not sure I understood the difference between the ground symbol. So like if we look at the top equivalents and the top two equivalences on the left and right.
Sure.
What's the difference between the ground symbol going off to the right or coming in from the left? I didn't follow.
Right. I don't really know, like precisely. So the idea here, if we limit ourselves to this very simple setup of like prepare and measure, then essentially this gives you the direction which a direction in which you're guessing. So here, this would appear only in a prediction setup, and this would only appear in a postdiction setup. I think if we want, so also there's issues of normalizations here. So this is not actually a equivalence, but it's more like a similar. So up to some constant, I think. I imagine that going in, like having more complicated setup where we're not doing pure prediction and pure postdiction, this won't work this simple. So this is actually an open problem. Like I haven't really arrived to it yet. It's more like a sketch.
Okay.
So
go ahead. I was gonna change the subject.
So. Just on this subject. So one thing I struggle with a lot is this Earth symbol, it sort of makes sense as a kind of ignore operation. You ignore what happens on the other side of that, and you can ignore the future, but you can also, it's reasonable to think about ignoring the past. But then at certain points, you assume that it also stood if you regarded it in a certain way for a flat distribution. And it's not clear to me that sort of conceptually that the reverse of ignoring is a flat distribution, because if you're ignoring something, it's almost that you don't care what the distribution is. Mm-hmm. So if you try and reverse that to assume that you have a flat distribution is problematic. And certainly in my own recent work, I've struggled with this issue as well. Do you have any comments on that?
Yes, I also struggled with this. And I think part of the benefit of separating the inferential and the causal aspects of the theory will be to clarify this issue. Because I agree with you that discarding in the past is not necessarily the same as the uniform distribution. And I think from in the very simple setup of pure postdiction and pure prediction, these are actually different things. So you have, mm-hmm. like when you have, you can have the uniform distribution in the past and in the future, depending if you're doing prediction or postdiction, and you can discard in the future or discard in the past, depending if you are guessing towards the future or guessing towards the past. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of like it's not like if we just limit ourselves to the like the process theory of completely positive trace-preserving maps, mm-hmm. then discarding the past is not well defined because we always have predictions. So you cannot really discard the past. We kind of mm-hmm. always have an assumption because we're always kind of doing this pure prediction. I cannot say that I have full, like precise picture of it, but I think at least this normalization issue is kind of clarified by the direction in which you're guessing, if you're considering at least this very simple setup.
Hmm. I mean, I'd wondered about using different symbols. So like in the talk I gave last month, I used a square box with an R inside it to indicate random. And then I think it's reasonable to say that the time reverse of a flat distribution is the ignore operation. But to say that the time reverse of the ignore is the flat, I think, is problematic. And so perhaps the ignore operation, you know, could have many time reverses in terms of, you know, if you're ignoring something, it could be anything that's coming in. In fact, it could be non-flat.
Yeah, I really think the reverse of the, like, I think the discard and the flat distributions are not time reversed of each other, but they are really these two opposites in the inferential theory. Okay. And then maybe we can have some similar thing that is time reverse of itself. Sorry, that is more similar time reversed in the process theory. Or maybe we can't have it. I'm not clear on it either.
Okay.
But I think the relation might not be time reversal, but it could be something about the inference, like a different role in the inference process.
Right.
And yeah, I think we can also use different symbols because, in the literature of quantum thermodynamics, they use like chi for a totally mixed state, or like there would be like the Gibbs distribution,
yeah.
which is kind of the state of minimal information. So maybe that would be the, like, and that changes depending on what free operations you're considering. So maybe that is the correct kind of flat distribution, kind of maximum ignorance.
Yeah, yeah. So,
different name, so... I agree.
So unitary quantum theory seems to prefer flat distributions in the sense that flat distributions are preserved, but it would be interesting to look at these non flat distributions. And right at the very end of your talk, you mentioned, I forget what it was, the introducing an arrow of time using a...
Yes, this, well...
Can you elaborate on this idea a little bit?
So this is also, yeah, sure. This is exactly what you're saying, that the unitary operations they preserve the flat distribution, but they don't preserve necessarily other distributions. But maybe, like, we know that at least in our world, there are some observables that that matter. So we have information about the energy of a system in general. So if I take a random point in space, I can guess its energy to a certain degree of accuracy. And so maybe the actual maps that are more interesting to us are the maps that preserve that guess, not necessarily any unitary evolution. Mm-hmm. And so I think that plus some explicit resource in the form of initial states. So the will give us this kind of time orientation. And so think about initial states and different kind of map.
Yeah, okay, this side.
I think there's also a very big literature on this that I'm not extremely familiar with. So it may be just a case of importing non-results.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. I sort of interrupted David.
No worries.
Okay. So, David, did you finish your question or did you have something more?
Yeah, I have another one or two questions or comments. So while you're on this slide, what is meant by necessary correlations here?
Right. So this is a hint. So I think let's take a step back and think about causality in deterministic theory. So if we think about like a relativistic theory, so we have, if we have a certain configuration in a region of space, that has necessary implications in a certain causal diamond, right? Inside that kind of has repercussions on everything and kind of forces things to be a certain way. So in the sense, like, causality is kind of, if you look at it from the point of view of inference, it tells you that if you know something about a region, then you can make immediate, you can make like probability one statements about things that are in the future or in the past in a certain region. And I think in quantum mechanics, this does not work, obviously, because we have indeterminacy. But the Born rule is kind of the next best like notion of it. And we have this, and the Born rule goes both to the past and to the future. And so in a way, like the causation, maybe necessary correlation is kind of a silly way to put it, but it's kind of like some a priori knowledge that you gain by knowing the state of a certain time and then using the Born rule towards the future and towards the past. Does that answer your question?
I think I've understood what you're saying. I'm not sure it's how I think about causation. Like,
so maybe
whether or not the correlations kind of follow from the initial conditions, or whether you can make deterministic predictions about events in some region, seems to me more about just the nature of the dynamical laws.
Right.
And I mean, I guess there's a relationship between the nature of the dynamical laws and causation, but it's not entirely clear to me. But I think I understand what you're saying.
Right. Because I mean, yes, causation has also because causation has many layers of many notions in it, right? So there's this idea of cause and effect, and there's like a directionality to this as well, and there is the notion of intervention that kind of helps us define even the concept of causation as opposed to causality. And maybe part of like the aim of looking for causality timelessly would be to kind of try to think about it without those aspects that are time-oriented, like the intervention and maybe keeping the intervention, but not keeping the idea that the cause and effect is like time-directed that way. The cause and effect is more like an idea, it's kind of mixed in with the idea of the direction of inference.
I think what you just said kind of addresses my final comment or question, but right. But maybe I'll say it anyway, and then you can respond if you want. I was just going to ask basically whether Pearl's notion of causality is like a guiding notion of causality for you or not. And it kind of sounds like it isn't, insofar as you've said things like, you know, if you set the boundary conditions at some point in time, then that will change the past as well as the future. And at least if you're thinking of these kind of interventions at a kind of operational level, we have this, the Pearl notion is that, you know, your interventions will influence the causal descendants, but not the causal parents. And I mean, so in some sense, I think there's just an asymmetry built into Pearl's causation. And so maybe that's, you know, the kind of thing you want to challenge or,
Yeah, I think you guessed right. Maybe I'm mad wanting to like put this into question, but I think a kind of the underlying question under all of this is causation and its orientation like a fundamental aspect of physics, or is it some effective way of reasoning about what we do at a certain level? But if we want, but can we build meaningful theories without this directionality of it? Like if, for example, if you want to work on, you know, quantum field theory or quantum gravity, like can we do away with this directionality in causation? Can we understand it as some sort of emergent notion?
Sorry, excuse me. I have a question, a follow-up. So causation for you is like causal processes linked with the laws, or what is cause? Now I'm confused about your definition of causation.
Right. So maybe I've been kind of careless making the distinction between causation and causality.
Exactly.
Right. So maybe causation can be brought down. Maybe causation can be understood like as something that is on top of causality, right? So maybe like if you think about general relativity as giving you the causal structure of space-time, right? It kind of tells you what are the possible avenues for information to flow, or like what can you learn by knowing something about what's going on in this region of space-time? What can you learn about the rest of space-time? And this is what causality is. It's kind of like the way I think about it is kind of how you can imagine propagating your knowledge. And causation has this, but on top of it is also has this notion of intervention and directionality, cause and effect that are directed, right? And so
does this kind it's not of the question it? Of no, the first notion is not the question of knowledge, the question of propagating, say you have an input in the laws and you propagate the laws.
Right, but you're
right.
The word is out there, and
okay.
Then we
have, okay, I see.
Right. So in a way, it's like the input is the state of knowledge I have about a specific physical system, and then I propagate the knowledge around. So, but this is maybe it might appear just a lexical differentiation. But
yeah, exactly. No, normally that in the at least philosophy literature, is some people call it causal processes or causal laws, and then the other ones is like interventionistic causation. Yeah, right.
But for example, because we are interested only in like because the operational formulation of quantum mechanics is prediction geared, the definition of a causal theory is time oriented as well, whereas causality has this also time symmetric version.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so there is a question by Ankur. Are you there?
I have a question on the last slide.
Yes.
Can I go to this?
This one?
Yes. So you were saying that probability like time is a concept invented by humans. So can we say that time only exists inside the human civilization and outside there is no existence of time because it's a concept invented by us?
Well, surely the notion of lunchtime is something that humans invented, right? So time is a very complicated like a layered cake of concepts. And so the question is, you know, how much of it is, you know, like what of it is fundamental depends on what level you're describing the world. And I think if you want, like in gravity, like in general relativity, we see that the notion of time is very different from the one we normally use in everyday life, right? Where we think that we kind of, you know, I'm talking to you and you're listening to what I'm saying now in the same moment as me. But we know that in relativity, this is not true. So it's like, I think this is what this quote is pointing at, is that if we are confused about time and what physics tells us about time, we should take it up, we should look critically about what we think time is and kind of revise, kind of look at the various assumptions that go into the definition. Does it make sense?
Yeah. My second question is, as the discussion on the point of time, so is there only three dimensions of time, like present, past, and future? Is there any higher dimensions of time also?
Well, maybe somebody else here is more interested. But the way I'm working on it right now, I'm not assuming that the present exists. I'm just describing, you know, the like we just imagine that everything happens in a different. So if you look at two events, they can either be in a time relation to each other or not in a time relation to each other. And this is kind of the structure I'm assuming. So there's even like there's only two kinds of time if you want. Is like okay. In my time, sometime, or not in my time, never, if you want.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so Lucien, maybe you had a question, and then there's Thomas.
I didn't. Did I press the question things?
No, I thought you wanted to say something.
I mean, I want to say lots of things, but I want to give people a chance to talk. So I'll it's a very interesting talk.
Then maybe Thomas can ask his question.
Thanks. Yeah, so I enjoyed the talk. So I had, you kind of, one way like operational quantum theory appears time asymmetric is that, you know, for preparations, you can prepare any state. For measurements, you put in a basis and then the outcome, you know, is like an element of the basis. So it seems to me your game, you say, okay, we're going to create these like scenarios where I'm going to input a basis to prepare a state, in a sense. You kind of select a basis for both the measurements and the state preparations, so you get this thing that looks symmetric. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, could I, instead of doing this, could I have said, okay, I'm just going to, in a sense, consider post-selected circuits where there's a state input and just an outcome at the thing. And then could you get kind of similar type of conclusion? So when you look at the Born rule, you know, there's like a ket and a bra, so it's like, you know, just the like essentially pre and post-selected stuff. And the stuff with the unitary, there's a like dual action, which like the dagger, if you put it in whichever side of the inner product. So would your reasoning kind of gone through in this kind of setup? If it's clear what I'm kind of saying, like you could look at just like pre and post selected stuff and create something that looks time symmetric by having, you know, the fact that measurements, you just select one of the outcomes of post selection. So your circuit now looks as just, there's an input state and an output outcome. Would that kind of work also, or would it be missing something?
I think one way of thinking of these two different games is really in the language of pre-selection and post-selection. So if you want, the post-diction game is a post-selected game where we assume some outcome in the future, right? And we're asking something given that.
Yeah.
So I think you can largely formulate it in that language. I don't think I was doing something different from that. The only reason I didn't talk about pre-selection and post-selection is that I think it's, in a way, it's kind of confusing. It adds another layer of like arrows,
yeah.
You know, like in the language itself. But I think in terms of physics, post-selection is just reasoning in terms of something that happened after a setup.
So I realize maybe I've got like an even simpler version of my question. So is the kind of essence of what you're doing, you're kind of working out in more detail, kind of similar if I to just take the Born rule and say, oh, this is time symmetric in a sense, because, you know, the kind of, whether you're in the bra or the ket of it, it can be either like whichever could be the state of the effect. Is this kind of what you're getting at? Are you kind of just like working out in more detail?
Right. In a way, it's assuming that, maybe it wasn't explicit enough about this, but assuming that the Born rule gives us the probabilities of the future given something in the past, you can show that actually the Born rule also gives you the probability of the past given the future.
Yeah, okay.
So that was the slide with the four processes.
Okay.
And I think some people, researchers, find this a totally obvious statement that doesn't need any elaboration. And some people, comprising me, were surprised when they hear this. So.
Yeah, I guess so. It's surprising in the more operational approach where you write the Born rule with like the, you know, the row and density operators, and it's like, okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Is it my turn to ask a question?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for the talk. I have a question that I'm not sure it's going to be clear, but I will try. So in all that you've been talking about, it seems that there's this past moment of time and this future moment of time, and you're trying to make probabilistic statements about these things. I'm sorry about the drilling upstairs. I don't know if you can hear it. What I want to ask is, what about if there's intermediate times involved? It seems like in the formalism you are using, you would do, okay, I purify this measurement, and then I bring the y you're carrying the outcome, I bring it to the end time. Like in one of your drawings, that was what it looked like. Yep. Basically, assuming that, yeah, let's go look. Yeah, this one. So I guess the wire from UF to C, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you're basically assuming it has a trivial evolution for the rest of the time. But in something like a Wigner's friend situation, this wouldn't be reasonable to assume a trivial evolution of the registers. So it would interact non-trivially with everything else. And what I'm asking, if you have thought about how would you go about assigning probabilities to these things, intermediate, that cannot be brought to the future in a straightforward way.
Beyond just putting all that evolution inside the UF, you mean?
Well, let's say you have this drawing,
yeah.
And you want to make a prediction about the result at C at the moment where it's created. So like just when it's coming out of UF.
Yeah, in the past.
And afterwards, there's a non-trivial evolution on
all
the freedom, which could happen, right? There's not, especially
yes, for sure.
With the physical understanding of measurement results, there's no, they can re-interfere with each other.
Yes.
And then it becomes harder, at least in my mind, to know how to assign these multiple time probabilities. Like, what does even the Born rule say that we should be doing? So I was wondering if this can help maybe to deal with this.
Mm-hmm. It's a very good point. I haven't thought about this explicitly yet. Here, we can agree that it's kind of immaterial if C is physically here or we put it here, like in the diagram, if you just move it typographically to the bottom. It's kind of immaterial for the calculations. The assumption, as you correctly state, if I understand it correctly, is that then C does not play again with the other two systems, right? It does not interact again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this would be part of thinking more carefully about the Heisenberg cut or the classical quantum interface, because here, you know, I'm assuming that C, that something, that the system is measured and we have this value over it, and then we, nothing happens to it anymore. It's not re-prepared and it doesn't go somewhere. So we don't have this, sequential stuff happening. I think in this very simple setup, for the purpose of showing that the Born rule does not care about the past or the future, it's not important. Obviously, in the longer term goal of developing a more complete formalism to think like this time agnostic way of thinking about quantum mechanics, I wouldn't know. I cannot say right now what it would look like. I think in Schmidt's Spaken's work, there they have by fiat they put these classical wires. So I think you can, the classical wires can go back into other systems and you can reason about them. So that's one way of doing it. You assume that there is a definite quantum classical boundary, and I think then I don't remember if in the paper they go into in details about it, but obviously the formalism works in that case. I don't know if that kind of answers your question. Like, instead of having C here, instead of having a pure state here, you just have a classical wire, and you can just read out the classical state, whatever is going here, and then the wire can plug in into a new box, for example.
Yes. Well, this makes sense to me. I guess it would mean the Wigner's friend experiment would not work if the outcome
right,
of
exactly.
the friend was a classical variable. Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, one thing about the operational framework is that we assume a macro reality, like we assume like a shared classical world, right? And we can't like the operational like the these diagrams are not really suited to think about Wigner's friend's experience in general.
Okay, thanks.
I think this is I can simplify this.
Yeah, hi, thanks, Flamini. So I'm going to try to ask a question about the big picture concerning the origin of the time symmetry that we experience. So you mentioned a couple of times that we remember the past and not the future. So I want to ask why that is. But let me sort of set up the question that the notion of time symmetry that you mentioned early in your talk when you're talking about operationalism was kind of a possibilistic notion. In the sense that, you know, if you have something which looks like a possible operation by thinking, you know, forward in time, you know, then you can write down another possible operation by thinking of it backward in time. So like it, classically we say things like, you know, if a certain Hamiltonian evolution, like a certain movie, when played backwards is another possible evolution according to Newtonian mechanics, then we say the theory is time symmetric. So that notion of that possibilistic notion of time symmetry, I think is a good feature to potentially ask of a causal theory. Like, so these classical causal theories, as long as the gates, the functions are invertible, you know, you could easily imagine that every sequence of functions forward in time, you know, if I think of them backward in time, that's just another possible set of functions. And so maybe it's another possible evolution. So it's a non-trivial constraint, like maybe it's only symplectic dynamics, but those are time reversal in this sense. So every backward played version of the circuit is a possible forward played version of the circuit. In the inferential theory, we talked a little bit earlier about how there's some sort of obstacles to achieving this kind of possibilistic time symmetry. Like, you know, what would be the kind of given that corresponds to a certain conclusion, right? Like if I am going to say make predictions about the truth of some proposition, then to turn that into a given, I would say I assume the truth of that proposition and make inferences from there. But it's not always obvious, like things like marginalization, what does that correspond to? So there's some subtleties, but I think it can probably be achieved that you could have time symmetry over on the inferential theory side as well in this possibilistic sense that every forward every inference from givens to conclusions, there's sort of a corresponding inference where the conclusions turn into givens and the givens turn into the conclusions you're making inferences about. All right, so the time asymmetry from that perspective comes from sort of the actual situation. So it actually happens that the kinds of givens that we tend to have are about the past, not about the future, right? Rather than the fact that it would be impossible to have givens like that about the future. You know, that's probably possible, a possible inference. It's just, you know, we have certain types of givens. All right, so finally, if you think that a theory of inferences is really not fundamental, like why do we have certain kinds of givens about the past? Well, maybe it's about our evolutionary history, that, you know, that's how we ended up with certain information. It seems to me that any time in asymmetry in the inferential sphere really has to be explained by a time asymmetry in the causal sphere, that there has to be some difference between, say, the initial and the final boundary condition, for example, especially if you have this possibilistic time symmetry in the causal sphere, where a backward played version of the causal story is a perfectly good, you know, time evolution. So I'm just curious, do you think that it all boils down, that like the time asymmetry we see, does it all boil down to a difference in boundary conditions in the causal theory, or do you have some other picture in mind?
So answering to your last question, I would say that my working assumption is yes, the answer is yes to the question. And like, basically the part of the work obviously would be to show that this is a consistent way of thinking about it. Maybe it's a bit short answer to your long questions, but one thing I wanted to point out though, that I think it's okay if there is an asymmetry in the inferential aspect. Not a time asymmetry, but an asymmetry between givens and conclusions. I think this is, I don't know if, I don't have any strong reason to believe that that needs to be removed. I agree with the fact that we have a time asymmetry, like we tend to have givens about the past, but not about the future. That yes, there's a time asymmetry in that sense. But the asymmetry between between givens and conclusions maybe it stays, or it cannot be fully reverse like that.
I see. So like this possibilistic time asymmetry that maybe I can't turn a set of givens into a set of conclusions, a set of conclusions into a set of givens.
Yeah. And I'm no expert in this branch of logic, like in logic in general, but I don't see an issue with it for my purposes. In terms of the time asymmetry in the givens that are in the past, yes, it's true. I think in the classical, if the word was classical, I think we were satisfied with thinking that there was an initial condition that was special, and that kind of gives us everything in the past. I don't see why, like, quantum mechanics makes it a bit harder to think about it because we have this problem with probabilities, but I don't see why the same statement doesn't hold.
Thank you.
Are there more questions? Okay. In this case, let's thank our speaker again.